This is part one of a two-part episode. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Kaya, Ghost Assassin.
Some ghosts fly and some ghosts cry, and I think that's okay. But if they tried to rule forever, I'd put them away. I've got swagger, and my dagger brings them to the light. Good night. If Taysa wants the oars of council, she must pay me right. 'Cause they are living in an ethereal world, and I am an ethereal girl. You know that they are living in an ethereal world, and I am an ethereal girl.
All right, hey. So are we all ready? Did you and Sean's have been communicating telepathically, of course, through the link.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything the rest of us should know about?
Only Shawn Michaels is regretting retiring from the WWE, but he's thinking of making a comeback at SummerSlam.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Wish him the best of luck.
Hang on. Beep, 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 beep. He says, cheers, Phil.
Oh, great. Thank you. Yeah. I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Nate Burgess.
And I'm Sean Watson.
And we are Commanderin. Commanderin. And now here's some music we're playing. Thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to put a spotlight on the topics you want to hear about, but never, ever talk about three banned topics: religion, politics, or Hearthstone. Remember to head over to join our Patreon community at patreon.com/commanderinmtg. By donating as little as a buck a show. We have a lot of patron questions this episode for, spoilers, our special guest, and you too could have asked some of those questions. This week, we have a wonderful show lined up for you, as I've sort of spoiled already. We're going to talk about Conspiracy 2, and to do that, we brought an expert, none other than the spider at the center of the web, Magic's very own little finger, Sean Main.
It's nice being here.
Welcome to the show.
I don't know if I'm Littlefinger in this scenario. That sounds terrifying.
It sort of fits with the whole conspiracy theme, doesn't it?
I feel like Leovold would be our Littlefinger, but...
Exactly.
He could be Varys.
Yeah, Varys, right.
Huh. Hang on, how do you feel about being a eunuch?
What's my other choices?
It's that or you're evil. There's your two choices in Westeros, eunuch or evil. Your choice.
I'll go with evil, but...
Yeah. Yep.
Magic's very own Varys. So, Sean, it's unbelievable, but some of our listeners might have just started playing Magic and probably don't know you in that case. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I have been at Wizards for about 6 years now. I entered through this thing that we did back 7 years ago called the Great Designer Search, where there was this big, long lead-up and competition, and we went through rounds of kind of this online reality show design challenges craziness.
Yeah.
And it produced me and Ethan Fleischer, who are both now senior designers at Wizards. And Conspiracy was the first big project that I worked on. It was really my baby. And then I've led that and Magic Origins, and now Conspiracy Take the Crown.
Very cool. Now, you were the, maybe this is a painful subject, you were the runner-up in the Great Designer Search 2, right?
It is true.
Now, is there a rivalry between you and Ethan?
Well, I felt an intense rivalry with him during the competition. And he will tell you that it was totally relaxed, and he is a much more laid-back person than I, perhaps. But no, I mean, Ethan is a fantastic guy. I also got a job, so I can't really blame him in any way.
Yeah.
And he is a dear friend now, so there is absolutely no sense of rivalry today.
Yeah.
Is there a third place guy you keep locked in a basement in case he comes hunting for you and Ethan?
We actually have now hired, we had Jonathan Laux, who is another one from the competition for a while. He's no longer at Wizards, but we do have working on Duel Masters. We have Scott Van Essen, who was sort of the third place finisher.
Cool.
That's still a great consolation prize.
It took him a little bit longer to get into the building, but he is also with us, and he's also been working on some Magic sets. He, I believe, is the designer. His first card to see print was Rally the Ancestors, so he is also contributing.
Yeah, broke a format wide open with that card.
Took a while, though. It's not like it hit and immediately everyone was crying about it. It took some time before that people figured out that deck.
Yeah, it was pretty neat when that erupted.
Was it Nantuku Husk as well, getting a reprint?
Yep, that definitely contributed.
Yeah.
So you guys work together, in other words.
Ethan and I, we haven't gotten had much chance to work together on projects because we have such a similar skill set that we are kind of trading off when like Ethan has been leading more of the actual Commander stuff. I think you had him on a while ago.
Yeah.
Where I've gotten to work on stranger projects like Conspiracy.
Yeah. Like you pushed the entire product concept, didn't you?
Yeah. So it's weird to think back when Conspiracy 1 was just kind of this, before it came out, really, I was a fan of multiplayer drafting. That's what I did with my playgroup back home before I was a wizard. And we actually specifically would do it with plane chase cards was the big thing that we realized was really fun to have these big multiplayer games, but you also have the planes in the middle as kind of this focal point. And I was sharing that with people and kind of saying, like, do you think there's something here? And Aaron Forsyth, who's the director of the department, and was kind of like, yeah, this is fun. I would do this. I don't know what a product looks like, but suddenly I had a design team and was working on actually building it. And it's weird because it's so much of a low-key sell compared to anything that we do today that normally there'd be this big ramp up and we'd be talking about, you know, is there enough of an audience? But at that time it was like, no, this is fun. Sure. Let's try it. Let's see what happens.
Oh, wow. So even in the last, I guess that would be 5 years?
It'd be about 5 years ago. Yeah.
So it's changed focus to now, like, is there a big enough audience?
It was very different after it came out that with Conspiracy 2, it was really just in a month or something after Conspiracy had initially come out that they were asking, like, hey, would you like to make a second one of these? And like, oh, this my first thing is my first real product that was mine as a wizard had come out. And so it was like, yes, absolutely.
Success.
And we do like these kind of product reviews with the VP of the department, Bill Rose, who actually is a Magic designer and part of the original play group that Richard had for the game. I remember he was talking about, I think it was Conspiracy 2 in relation to Eternal Masters, and was saying, like, yeah, Eternal Masters is a little bit of the experiment, but Conspiracy, oh yeah, we're sure that's going to work out. And like, oh, this crazy little experiment is now the sure thing. That was an awesome position to be in.
You know, from an outsider's perspective, it seems to have sold like mad. There's anecdotal experiences of people saying, well, it's still sitting on our store shelves. And like, I haven't seen a Conspiracy box except the one I have in about a year.
So my LGS has a few boxes of Conspiracy left that the storeholder kept back because he expected Conspiracy 2 to happen and he wanted to do a Conspiracy One draft night a couple of weeks before Conspiracy Two came out.
That's so awesome.
That's the only product I've seen. That's Patriot Games in Leeds, by the way.
That's patience.
I've got a few boxes in the trunk of my car for emergencies, so there's that. Definitely not joking with that.
That's funny. That's awesome. That's great. Yeah, this one, I mean, it's hard determining who is the biggest fan of the people we know. It's either Bruce Richard, who basically wrote about it for 6 months in advance and created the Pollyanno Post, or it's Josh Lee Kwai, who has probably bought something like five cases of it, minimum five cases of it. Probably a lot more, actually. And, of course, all of our listeners, except for the very few who turn into here, the pre-roll footage and then bounce out, play Commander. Do you also play Commander?
Oh, absolutely. Commander and drafting are my favorite formats, which might be obvious from Conspiracy, but yeah, no, I love Commander.
Hmm. And what do you play? What's your favorite Commander?
My go-tos, and this is probably very telling of the kind of Commander player I am, are I have a Kalia deck, a Marchesa deck, and a Feldegriff deck.
I was expecting the last one to be something like Rafik or Animar.
Oh, no. I'm working on a Mael deck that's I'm stealing a concept from Will Blanks, where he has just a huge box full of different five-power creatures and just shuffles a bunch into his deck at the beginning of the game so he doesn't actually know what he's going to draw. And I think that sounds exactly like the kind of Magic I want to play.
Wow. That's cool.
You've got three very varied strategies there with those three commands you named them.
Yeah.
You've got like Hug, Control, and Aggro all going on.
I should say it is probably the least huggy of Feldegriff decks that's out there. I sometimes we'll call it Poisoned Hippos because it's much more like I'll play a Suture Priest and then give you a lot of hippos.
Nice. Very nice.
Cruel. That's cruel.
Yeah.
Well, if there's any way to get hold of these deck lists from you, that'd be awesome. We'll put them up in our guest folder up on Deck Stats.
Let me see if I can find a list. I'm not good at writing lists down. I'm more just, let me throw in cards and change one at a time. But I'll see if I can find a list, especially for Feldegriff.
No, that'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah, we'd love to see that.
Before we start diving into Conspiracy, which is pretty much the only Magic news this week, right? We have a little bit of self-promotion other news. We're going to have Donald Miner back on for a segment in the next few episodes to talk about the effect Eldritch Moon has had on the Commander meta, because one of the things he talked about when he was on the show was how different commanders are kind of seeing a lot of play. Alloro right now is the number one commander, but it's being overtaken by Marin. So we're looking forward to speaking with him again to see which cards from Eldritch Moon are being played more than the others. We have an upcoming two-part episode with Shivam Butt as the guest, and we'll be discussing diversity in gaming. It's two parts, and we didn't even get to everything, so we'll have to revisit the topic a little bit later. And then, after Conspiracy, if we can make it work around his vacation schedule, we're going to have a special guest on to talk about politics in Commander.
Who could it be?
Who could it be? So stay tuned for that. And now we'll get to more Conspiracy 2 related conversations. And before we get into the whole main topic of what Conspiracy 2 is, we have a minor topic, don't we, Nate?
Yep.
Ah, yes. Well, this week a card was previewed that we kind of raised our eyebrows at. And as we know, that's a great opportunity for a watch list.
The watch list. Da, da, da.
I love when you do that, Sean.
The watch list is where we look at a card that we think is going to change your meta. People are going to look at the card and say, oh my goodness, I got to do something about this. So today's watch list card is Leovold, Emissary of Trest, Legendary Creature Elf Advisor 3-3. Each opponent can't draw more than one card each turn. And there's some more stuff on the card. Whenever you or a permanent you control becomes the target of a spell or ability an opponent controls, you may draw a card. I'm sure we can come to an arrangement.
Mm-hmm. And it's a 3 converted mana cost Sultai card. That's awesome.
One blue, awesome. One black, one green. Sean, did you design this card?
I did not design this. So the way our process works with the design, I was leading the design, and that's much more of the blue sky, the vision for a set. And a lot of the like brass tacks of individual cards comes from the development team. So I had a hand in some of the legends, but they definitely designed this guy. This guy came from Ben Hayes.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. I'm going to feel not so bad when we rip it a new one then.
So Ben Hayes is the one who likes multiplayer drafting but hates Commander.
This guy is perfect for your Commander game. You get all the politics of pissing people off.
So yes. Should we discuss what? Because, I mean, this is an ability. Opponents can't draw more than one card each turn. It's an ability that's printed on two other cards, notably Spirit of the Labyrinth, which is a white creature. It's a 3/1 white creature that says exactly that. And kind of Notion Thief, which says, other than the first card each player would draw each turn, the person who controls Notion Thief draws it instead. So those cards aren't talked about in fabled sort of this is broken as hell kind of ways. Why is Leovold like that, fellas?
I'm going to read a list of cards. I'm not going to read the entire cards or we'll be here for 20 minutes. But all of these cards effectively read, if Leovold is on the field when this effect happens, everyone gets rid of their entire hand, and then you draw several cards, and your opponents draw one card. And note that if beforehand on the same turn you activate Miko Koro or Temple Bell or Gaia Reach Sanitarium, then your opponents will be drawing 0 cards from any of the following. Windfall for 2 and a blue. Jace's Archivist, 1 in blue-blue, it's a repeatable windfall on a stick. Whispering Madness, 2 blue and a black. It's a windfall that is repeatable by attaching it to a creature that does combat damage. Then there's Dark Deal, 2 and a black. Hey, instead of discarding, how about we shuffle everyone's hands away with Day's Undoing, 2 and a blue. Time Reversal, 3 blue-blue. Time Spiral, 4 blue-blue. And as an honorable mention, we'll mention Time Twister, which is 2 and a blue and costs about $1,000. Then there is Teferi's Puzzle Box. It's an artifact for 4. And if you stack your triggers right, then your opponents get no cards ever. If you want to make this even more disgusting, you can add more discard and discard matters effects. We'll cover those in depth in a later Big Token episode about Naith of the Gilt Leaf. And incidentally, if you are going Elf Tribal with Leovold, Naith loves all of those blue windfall type effects that he could not access before. And with Leovold out, he can enjoy them once. For now, our discard highlight card is Anvil of Bogarden. It's an artifact for 2, which says when Leovold is out, every player except you draws a card, then discards a card on their draw step.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is brutal.
Yeah, it is.
So I've been goldfishing with this deck, and I've played against Nate, but goldfishing with it, I consistently get to my opponents had 0 cards in hand and couldn't draw cards on turn 6.
Yep. If you have a burgeoning and 4 lands and a soul ring in your opening hand, you can do it on turn 2.
Well, that's it's extreme circumstance, but consistently turn 6, often turn 4, depending on which tutor I drew to go and get my puzzle box.
Right. And you're in black, so you have the tutors you need. And blue, actually, which you'll find the artifacts. Well.
We'll go get the artifacts.
Teferi's puzzle box is a lock, isn't it?
Yeah, it's because listeners that are wondering, oh, well, surely you get one card. No, because you always draw before any triggers resolve on your draw step. Right. What happens with Teferi's puzzle box is you draw your one card for the turn, then cycle all the cards in your hand to the bottom of your library, and then because Leovold's out, you draw 0 cards.
Well, so they better enjoy those instant cards, right?
Yep. You better really... So I've played Nate's version of this, and the only way I could beat it was to... I got very lucky and had a load of sort of high... It was Mono Blue Kira Great Glass Spinner deck. Night Spinner, what am I talking about? And I managed to get Land Equilibrium out and then have a Nykthos out and hold a bunch of counters to make Leovold too expensive to cast and then sort of just grind out the game, kind of playing stacks in a really horrible way.
A lot of people on Twitter were like, you know, the social contract will protect us.
Will it, though?
yeah, I can't even keep a straight face. I mean, if you're playing in a meta where this sort of behavior is unacceptable, where you create locks, like, you know, somebody plays a Derevi and then everybody hates on that player, not the Derevi deck, but the player for playing Derevi in the first case, then yeah, you're probably safe from this after the first time because somebody is going to put this together and just abuse it and demonstrate why this card is actually a problem once and then move on and say, ho, let's play our Feldegriff decks, unless it's Sean Main's Feldegriff deck, in which case it's probably Cutthroat.
I just like that you said that Stax was the hero in this scenario.
Right? I know. That's how broken I think Leovold is.
And it's because of Teferi's Puzzle Box and the other ways to just get rid of your opponent's hands.
Words of Wasting. Anytime you withdraw a card, you can pay one and each opponent discards a card. So that's another way of just saying, okay, because you're in these colors and you're going to be playing cards that allow you to draw lots of cards, you're just going to strip people's hands super fast. And it's so quick to do it. And it's in the colors of Counterspell and Ramp. So it's got Super Magic Easy Mode Simic in there within its color pie. And then Black's got the tutoring to make it super, super, super easy mode, triple easy mode. You know, if this card was Mardu or even Grixis, then I think it would probably be easier because with green, you can even remove the sort of things that are going to stop Leovold from working, like Necropotence gets around Leovold because you don't draw the cards, you put them into your hand.
Yep.
But that's if you have enough time to cast the Necropotence and have the Necropotence to hand. I mean, you're in black, so you can tutor it up, which is what I'll be doing every time I play against Leovold, because I play with black in every deck, but almost without monocolors, the exception. All the people that play in paper groups where this isn't going to be a big problem and people go, oh, well, an Ocean Thief isn't a problem. Spirit of Labyrinth's not a problem. Well, they're not in your command zone constantly. And generally, you don't play with those two cards with a strategy built around them to lock your opponent's hands out within the first 6 to 10 turns of the game.
Yeah, that's the real breaker for this, that it's in the command zone. And of course, you know, everybody's like, well, you can just zap it with instant speed removal, or you can zap the puzzle box with instant speed removal. Yes.
But you're not holding the instant speed removal.
If you're holding it, sure, you can do that as long as the Leovold player is not being wise with his mana. As soon as the Leovold player has enough mana to cast Leovold or the puzzle box and have a counter spell in hand, life became a lot more difficult. And that's the reason this guy's on the watch list. It's the conditions for undoing this lock or preventing the abuse are so limited.
I think he's going to be... So can you name commanders that when you go to an LGS, not your paper mat where you sit down with your friends, but you turn up to an LGS, what are the commanders that some... I was going to use a rude word there. Some person that you wouldn't normally invite to your paper meta, should we say, that sits down for a pickup game, because they all exist. What are the commanders you expect that person that you wouldn't invite to your paper meta to pull out? Narset, Arkham Dagsum, Xur.
Gaddock Teague.
Gaddock, Rafik, maybe. I think Leovold goes straight into that category of top tier commanders, which...
kill on sight.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Sean, your opinion? You're a magic designer.
I'm just glad you didn't add Kalia to that list, or I would be feeling bad.
I think Kalia's okay. She's essentially just a Rakdos deck. I think you have to treat Kalia as if She's running Land Destruction.
I mean, I'll put Sire of Insanity in that deck, which is doing exactly the thing you're talking about. But
no, I still get to draw a card with Sire of Insanity.
That's fair.
Turn one, player mana. Turn two, drop Anvil of the Garden. Turn three, play Leovold. There you go. Turn three, no one's drawing cards. You know.
I will say, I sure hope the sky isn't falling quite as much with this card as you're saying. I think most of the things you're talking about sound pretty cool. The puzzle box and the anvil part, that's pretty scary. I agree with you.
Yeah, well, Sean has an absolutely cutthroat paper meta, so they'll see this card and then they'll figure out how to work around it or just outright tell people not to play the card anymore, won't you, Sean?
Yeah, so I have my Kira Greatglass Spinner deck, which is my Problem Solver deck, which is certain commanders, if we see them, I'm just going to pull it out and just counter everything you've got until everyone else kills that player, and then we continue a nice game of Magic. That's generally how we deal with those things.
Teamwork.
I'm expecting to see Leovold. Indeed, it does pull people together in so many ways.
That seems appropriate for the character. Look at that. Look at that smarmy smile.
Yeah.
Don't shake that hand, listeners. Don't shake that hand. It's a. You'll only come out worse than that deal. The house always wins.
And some other paper metas are fine with it as well, right? Fine with that level of power. And, you know. Yeah, in those cases, even in those vicious cases, the social contract will hold sway. But we play a lot in GPs as well and in public scenarios where we go to a Friday Night Magic and somebody's like, oh, you want to play Commander while we wait for the next one? And then somebody will...
Who knows what you're getting?
Yeah, who knows what you're getting? You're getting a lot of antisocial folks, maybe. I'm joking about that. But you're getting a lot of people who just don't care and they're just there to beat somebody up. And that's where the new players get turned off, and Leovold facilitates that. So that's what we're concerned about. We know that in playgroups that meet regularly, Leo will have one or two appearances, and then he'll just kind of go by the wayside because he's just too powerful. It's the other experiences that we don't control directly like that and can't control at a store, at a GP, and so forth. And that's where we think we're going to see a lot of this abuse. And that's the kind of thing that turns new players off. So we're concerned.
Yeah, he could go Elf Tribal with Howling Mines in there, but most people, I think, probably won't
limit themselves to that.
Sean, to address your Sire of Insanity comment, Sire of Insanity hits you too. Leovold doesn't.
Yeah.
It's true.
So. Yeah. Yeah, it's a comparison, but I don't think it's an equal comparison.
And Kalia costs 4 mana to cast, so, you know, there's just that one extra turn or one extra mana if you're ramping hard.
Kalia costs 4 mana to cast and doesn't have haste, whereas his ability automatically switches on.
Yep. And she's in colors that don't ramp. Except for black.
True.
So. If only there was a new cool Mardu commander. I'm so excited about that, by the way.
Yeah, she is really cool.
So I'm sure we'll get some flack on Twitter for insulting Leovold and saying, hey, I don't know what kind of you play with and blah, blah, blah. We're talking about the hypothetical LGS pickup game. Everyone's going to have their own acceptable level of power in their paper meta. But when you go to a public place, like Phil said, I don't know, is this just going to be omnipresent for a while? It's inarguably the best 3-color pairing in Magic. I think it's a toss-up between Sultai and Bant.
It's definitely something we have to pay attention to, right? And I think it's actually still too early to talk about how to prevent Leovold from getting a lock. And we're still experimenting with it, and right now it's instant speed removal and counter spells, and good luck.
Mm.
Oh, so you're giving the Leovold player cards?
Yes, because we can't easily deter it by turn 4.
Yeah, the counter spell doesn't, but... Sure.
That's true.
You know, now I've said that every time I play against Leovold, I'm only ever draw Arcane Denial. Oh, I'm still giving him cards.
Yeah. All right. So, Nate, do we have anything else we want to say about Leo? Maybe defeating him? Anything you can advise?
Watch out for Leovold.
Wow. And thanks, Ben Hayes.
Ha 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 ha! Yeah, Ben.
No, I mean, we had Ethan on, and he created Derevi.
I didn't mean to throw Ben under the bus like that.
Yeah, it was great. It was great, Sean. You were like, oh, I didn't design Label. That's not a design card.
Let me tell you about the process and who you should blame. Here's his home phone number.
Yeah, that's great.
I think a quick positive on Leovold is the Vorfos development of Trest to being this elf city of backstabbing, roguish,
true.
Dilettantes is very cool. And it did it in one card, so awesome.
Yeah. I love that we're getting to see a little bit more of Fiora as a whole, and that you're drawing these lines between Edric, and yeah. I love Leovold from that side of things.
Yeah. So did Trest officially move to Fiora? Is that what's happened?
Well, it was ambiguous where Trest was before, but this is saying, yes, it is definitely on Fiora. It is not Paliano, because he's, Leovold is the ambassador from Trest, but it is somewhere else on the plane.
Excellent.
Elfville.
It completely validates my Agents of Trest deck. Which, of course, is loaded with Hydras.
What? Hail Hydra.
Exactly. You've played my Agents of Trust deck, Nate. Don't act innocent.
Mm-hmm. I think we spoke about that on episode 2.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. It was like episode 1 or 2 we spoke about that. Because we were talking about what you were going to do with Thievery and Crime. Back in the day. Look at that.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Ancient history.
I can't think of anything else we want to talk to Sean about. Can you guys?
Well, it's been a pleasure talking, hearing your fears about Leovold and...
Sorry.
So don't feel too bad about us ripping on Leovold. The whole point of the watch list is for us to discuss a card with a grumble, grumble, grumble.
Absolutely.
Kind of attitude. So, don't take it personally, Ben Hayes.
Out of curiosity, did Ben Hayes also design Prophet of Krufix?
No, I can take a little bit of the blame for that one, I can tell you that was an Eric Lauer design. He was the lead of Theros, or the lead developer of Theros. I was also on that development
again,
team.
Huh?
Well, it's easy to incidentally blame development because. Not all cards get routed through design. All cards that eventually get signed off on by development. But he was working on the cards, and he was working on those gold rares. And I remember him asking me, like, "Oh, Sean, this seems like a thing that Commander players would enjoy." And I'm like, "Yes, Eric, Commander players would definitely enjoy that card."
He was not wrong. That is an accurate statement.
Yes. You could say we enjoyed the hell out of it. That's funny.
Yeah. It was one of those cards you had to either accept it into your life and embrace it wholeheartedly, or you were just going to be bitter for a long time. So. Yeah.
Yeah. And that skewed the meta hard.
Mm.
In my defense, the one other card where he had asked me a similar question was Chromatic Lantern, and I think that card is an all-star and a home run, and I'm happy for it, but...
Yay!
Yeah, it's win-win-win-win-win, Chrome Lantern.
Which sort of brings us to the reprint question we have, which is, how do you select reprints for Conspiracy 2? Right now, Chromatic Lantern, given the multicolor push in Conspiracy 2... Chromatic Lantern seems perfect. Why isn't it in there? Maybe not that specific card, but how are you selecting reprints?
So this is a big, big, meaty topic. But the first and foremost, the majority of the set is reprints. So we need to have something where that draft environment that we're building is built largely on the backs of reprints, and a lot of the different color themes are kind of working from reprints, and some of it is figuring out what Magic has done that the set wants. The really clear example of that was we wanted something that was putting creatures on the board and gave you kind of early game plays and late game plays. And we played around with a few things like that. But Monstrous was the clear answer to that. And So we had a whole mechanic that we could kind of work with. But what you're talking about, a lot of those like high-end, exciting reprints at Rare, well, it's a matter of figuring out what is awesome for the set and also are exciting cards that people want to be opening and are not already earmarked for the Masters Edition that just happened, or things coming down the road. So there's, it is the fight of, I mean, show and tell was one that way back in Conspiracy One, I was like, hey, this would be a super rad reprint because it does something really fun in the context of a conspiracy draft, but also it's this card that people are going to be excited to open and, you know, go put in their commander decks or their vintage decks or whatever. And at that time, I was told, like, maybe this isn't the place for it. But when Conspiracy 2 came around and I asked the same question, I got told, like, yeah, we haven't found a home for it yet. Go for it.
Yeah, so the cachet of the first one, you can be like, I'm designing the follow-up set for this incredibly successful product.
That's a pretty good impersonation of me, yeah.
I want this card. Oh, okay, Sean, you can have it.
Is there a as regards sort of like really choice reprints, like Show and Tell's a good example, but then things like Inquisition of Kozilek, Serum Visions, those Ghostly Prison, those uncommons that, oh, and I know some have been rare shifted, but those uncommons that have got ridiculously pricey due to formats like Modern, is there like a list at head office of we need to think about these cards for reprints in sets? Or
I mean, certainly we have our eye on what people are playing and what hasn't seen print in a long time. The challenge of that is we work so far in advance that often, you know, design begins about 2 years before a set sees print, development happens about a year before. That what people are kind of clamoring for can shift so suddenly that we will often listen to people, but it will be a year in the future at the very least that we can really make sort of right turns on anything.
So a lot of our listeners are demanding this card. Is there a Jace to be reprinted in this set?
No Jace. We have two Planeswalkers this time, but they are all new.
Well, which one is Jace? Like wearing a mask, maybe?
Is Jace a black woman or a goblin in a wheelchair?
We've got, I'm trying to think if there's even anything that gets to hint at Jace here. We don't even see him in any of the art, if I'm not mistaken, from the reprints.
Excellent.
Ironically, Paliano is the sort of city I imagine Jace would flourish in.
He would do very well there, yeah.
Yeah.
He'd kind of ruin the fun, though, of all the backstabbing and politicking if he can just read people's minds.
Solve the problems. He'll go out, he'll get a treaty, everyone will sign it, fine, they'll all get along.
Does Pollyanna have a no telepaths allowed sign? Like, welcome to Pollyanna, unless you're telepath. Yeah, sorry, Boop. I slipped.
Sorry. Jace is just somewhere in the back wearing a mask. We've already got the connection to Ravnica through Jeering Homunculus.
Yeah.
Yeah, because of flip. I guessed, you may be able to confirm or unconfirm this, that Kaya might be part of the Orzhov Syndicate before her Planeswalker spark ignited.
I can confirm nothing about future plans for Kaya. Or past plans, I guess.
Yes, that's true. History, backstory. I thought you were going to say something great then. Nothing. I can confirm nothing.
Oh, oh, and Mikkel, it's Mikkelthid, not Fipplethip.
All right, okay.
Mikkelthip is, yeah, Jeering Homunculus.
Yeah, they're different homunculi.
Yeah, so Orzov seems to be getting the luxury treatment when it comes to planeswalkers, because you've got the three Sorins and Kaya all within relatively recent time of each other. And four, as a guild pairing, is more than any other guild has. So do the design teams of different sets talk to each other about this sort of thing, or is it just sort of bad luck that you... Bad luck's probably the wrong way to put it. Is it just a coincidence that we have four Orzhov Planeswalkers all of a sudden?
So the way Planeswalker design works is it's a conversation between the creative team, who is very focused on the stories and is focused on who's going to be relevant at each point to the narrative, and the development team figuring out kind of what does standard need. Let's make sure if we have different planeswalkers that they're going into different decks, and it's not... Absolutely, all of the design teams are very, very much talking to each other. And actually, overall with our process, like, they are constantly overlapping. So, you know, people will be working on Shadows at the same time Conspiracy is getting worked on, but also, you know, Shadows design overlaps the tail end of Khan's development, things like that. Mm-hmm. With specifically the White Black, it is mostly that there were a couple places in the story where Sorin was really relevant. So he kept coming up as a relevant character, and it was on development again to kind of pivot around a little bit with what his design was doing. With Kaya, the fact that she's not in standard, we thought it was okay to do another White Black Planeswalker. And long-term plans for her and her character, being White Black was very significant. I'll put it that way.
See, I predicted she might be Esper, and she might be our first Esper commander. Not commander, sorry, Esper planeswalker. But I got that bit wrong. I was only a third.
Well, she was written as an Esper character.
Yeah, there's an interpretation there.
What was the blue aspect of her?
All of the planning, and she needed the blueprints for the plans for the house, and so all of that, and spending an entire night planning before doing the operation. That's very blue.
A lot of forethought and making sure she had the right tools,
Okay,
and she knew where all the rooms were. And
I buy that. I always just think of her as being like, she is the Han Solo of fighting ghosts. So
I want that as on a t-shirt. I'm the Han Solo of fighting ghosts.
That's awesome.
Yeah, part of me thinking she'd be Esper was she's definitely clearly Orzhov in her colors. Mm-hmm. But I was like, well, they won't do a fourth Orzhov straight away. But that's probably me applying non-story-based thought to predictions, which is wrong when you're talking Vorthos stuff. So, yeah, it's my own downfall, I guess. Anyway. Where's my Esper Planeswalker? Where is she?
Yeah, you know, Ethan promised us a Thopter Queen.
Quote, promised, unquote.
Wait, what was this promise Ethan was making?
Well, I'm absolutely sure that's the way it happened. He promised us a Thopter Queen.
When we said, can we have a Thopter Queen? And he said, that would be cool, wouldn't it? That was a promise.
I see.
So what are you going to promise us? Esper Planeswalker, maybe?
I promise you Ethan's first child.
I'm sure we'll get a box of fingers in the mail.
Yeah, do you have all your fingers, Sean?
Right now, presently. I don't know. I'll have to see after these Leovold commander players.
Well, it's Ben Hayes' finger, as we clearly know, that's on the line.
Yeah, Ben.
Not many magic employees can call themselves Littlefinger anymore.
That's what Marrow calls himself now, but he calls himself Littlefingers.
Right.
Lots of plural in there.
Because of his necklace. All right. So, Nate, you want to walk us through the mechanics of the set?
All right, new mechanics for Conspiracy 2. We got, starting with, Monarch. So, Sean, is it WotC's intention to increase sales at various fast food burger franchises due to the availability of paper crowns to be used in games?
You can use whatever crown you want. I mean, there just happens to be a place where you can find nice, cheap paper crowns.
I've just realized Josh Lee Quay is on holiday in England while we record this. Has he gone on holiday to steal the crown jewels?
Oh, he probably has.
If he's got a pimpin' mink hat when he comes back, it might be real.
Sean, you need to alert the monarch. I was going to say you need to alert the crown. Let them know.
Well, I can call the queen.
I know how this game works. I've just got to attack him now and take it from him.
This is a cool mechanic.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm incredibly excited about this mechanic and incredibly excited for people to actually get to play with it. But we needed something for the set that was going to draw the target on different people's heads. You know, I really liked kind of how Dethrone worked that way in the first Conspiracy. And we wanted something that was kind of doing the same thing, but having it actually be upside, that you want to be sitting on the throne, but also know that you are painting that big target on your forehead was really, really fun.
Yeah, it seems much more overt than Dethrone as a mechanic, right? This one is, I get this benefit as opposed to Dethrone being, oh, I'm on the throne?
Yes, yes. I saw a lot of original Conspiracy games where the whole game was, I want to have the second most life, so I will not attack you. And that really wasn't the intention behind that mechanic.
Yeah, this one draws attacks where Dethrone sort of, it drew attacks as well, but it forced them to be spread around.
Mm-hmm.
Were you responding to that dynamic where the games were lengthened because you were encouraged to attack the person who had the most life?
We needed something that was kind of fulfilling the same role that Dethrone had been created to fill. But we actually, one of the first things that we had in the set that did not work out was a reward if you had the most life. And we thought that might be playing in kind of a similar way where, you know, other people were incentivized to knock you down if you were getting these rewards from turtling up. But we really didn't like that dynamic. So, you know, we iterated on a bunch of designs, and I think this one actually came from another Duel Masters designer, James Hotta. He had suggested this, having some kind of object that people are literally fighting over, and it ended up just being such, like, oh, this has the perfect flavor. We're literally fighting over the crown or the throne or the being the monarch. And actually that ended up setting a tone for, you know, so much of what the flavor of the set was.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. I've heard people talking about playing with the monarch rule, even if nobody has any cards that make you the monarch.
Oh, so that's cool.
That'd be like the monarch would be free, open at the beginning of the game, and the first person to get some damage in steals it, and then you've got it going.
Nice.
Yeah, it seems like a really cool thing to do.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I'm in favor of any mechanic that gives me a flimsy but politically justifiable excuse to attack someone.
I love the fact that you draw the card in the end step, which means you're actually going to get use out of it. It's a brilliant decision.
Yeah, I should say I will now praise Ben Hayes because we did not figure out exactly what the bonus or the mechanic specifically was going to be. We knew it was this thing that you fought over. We knew it wanted to give you some kind of bonus, but there was so much iteration to figure out. It seems so simple now to say end step draw card, but we were trying like your creatures get +1/+0, or you get a creature at the end step, or you draw a card at the beginning of your turn, so you've got to hang on to it. But ultimately, after trying a bunch, I think end step draw card, it's nice and clean and simple. You get something no matter whether you're able to defend it or not. It was super, super cool and absolutely the right bonus for that mechanic.
Yeah, very cool.
All right, here's a question from one of our patrons.
from Barney Kissington at Big B Gaming SWE. Did you have any thoughts on how the new keyword Monarch would see play outside of Conspiracy 2 drafts when designing the keyword?
We were absolutely thinking about that, especially as we were working on those the really exciting cards with it, like Marchesa. Specifically with for her, we wanted like that Monarch card that would drive a commander deck. But I'm real excited for Monarch to be showing up, certainly in commander games, and having that extra dynamic that it's throwing in there that, you know, like you said, now I have a reason to be attacking you. And I love anything for multiplayer that is kind of discouraging the turtling up. Mm-hmm. And some amount of turtling up and building up over time is fine, but it's so easy when the game is built mostly for 1v1 for that to just be the powerful multiplayer thing to do. And it's so much more fun when you're attacking with creatures. So I'm hopeful that it's going to be really fun in Commander. I have seen some speculation with some of the cards, like Throne of the High City, that some people have been speculating maybe that's a card for a legacy deck or something, which also sounds like a kind of cool dynamic going on. So we definitely were thinking about it, particularly for Commander, and it's gravy if there's also some showing up in some older formats a little bit.
That's awesome. Goad does that as well in terms of breaking the stalemate. No turtles with Goad.
Yes. Especially because, so Commander has the dynamic where it's, you know, you've got very powerful multiplayer cards. When you lower the power level a little bit to this limited format, it's real easy for that turtling to just be the thing to be doing. And so we were just looking for ways to kind of crack that those shells open and get people actually moving the game forward and be incentivized to move the game forward.
And another new mechanic, Melee, that one actually encourages spreading your attacks.
Yeah, so back to Dethrone in the original Conspiracy, the thing that I really liked about that was not only that it was sort of painting a target on one person, but it was often... It's easy for mechanics that are encouraging you to attack to be things like Stealer of Secrets, where I want to be attacking the person who's in the weakest position and can't defend themselves. And we want, and with Dethrone and a little bit with Monarch, it's nice that you are often attacking the person in a very strong position. And Melee kind of comes at the same thing of not picking on the weak player, but being incentivized to attack, just attack everybody.
And it does that. Now, which of us do you think is going to enjoy Council's Dilemma more to the hosts? Are we going to play voting cards now? Because now it's not a complete win-loss proposition.
Well, I know a deck that's going to use Expropriate, which has a picture of Leovold in someone's treasure vault.
I really like Council's Dilemma, but I actually liked the old voting cards as well. I thought they were great. The blue split decision, is it? The blue one was really good. The Council's Judgment's an amazing card. If someone's got a load of really problematic permanents, you can team up with the rest of your table to take them out. But Council's Dilemma, the black one's great. Death and Taxes, very well named after a famous death. Council's Dilemma's very exciting.
Sean Main, do you think that the voting mechanic, do you think that's something that is clearly identified with Conspiracy, sort of like Eldrazi are colorless and so forth? Like, Conspiracy has voting.
I think at this point, we didn't have it in Take the Crown for a while, and it was something that people were missing. They were actively saying, yeah, I miss having that big group activity. And we brought it back, and it made the twist on it, and I'm real happy. So yeah, if a Conspiracy 3 were to ever come out, I am sure we'd be looking at strongly considering voting sticking around.
Yay.
This is part one of a two-part episode.
Typical Mandarin.
Nate, you were telling me the other day that you particularly like Goad.
I like Goad.
What a discussion.